This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons, 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
I'll be honest, like many of you, I preferred Isaiah Simmons to Derrick Brown. However, I acknowledge my bias in this. I'm biased because I watch Simmons up close. I've talked to Dabo Swinney about him. And selfishly, I thought he'd have a more fun career to follow, which would lead to more interesting content on shows such as this one. I can't knock the pick for Carolina, though. I think the margin between Simmons and Brown is very small. Here's what I believe the two differentiating factors Rule, Tepper, and Herney considered that led to the Auburn defensive lineman coming off the board first. The Panthers chose position value and need over best player available. Interior defensive line, it's a more glaring hole than safety or outside linebacker, wherever you think Simmons is going to play. And there's been conflict on what the best case scenario for Simmons is in the league. Is it Thomas Davis or is it Tyrann Mathieu? Regardless, filling the holes the Panthers had on the D-line, losing Vernon Butler and Dontari Poe and Mario Addison and Gerald McCoy, it was just so glaring that you couldn't leave things after day one where Woodrow Hamilton is still slated to be your starting defensive lineman across from K.K. Short in a 4-3 defense. By the way, Woodrow Hamilton, still a football player and not a former president. I like Simmons more than Brown, but I acknowledge not just my bias, but the fact that Simmons is a bigger risk than Brown. I like Tua more than Burrow. I talked about this quite a bit. But there's no question that Burrow is a safer pick than Tua ultimately turned out to be. The only player I think Carolina would have preferred to Brown that reasonably could have fallen to 7 was Jeff Okudah, because they have such a glaring need at corner as well. Interior defensive line, it is a more glaring hole than safety and linebacker. It is a more valuable, important position than those other spots. It just is. In today's NFL, you need a good defensive line. You need a good defensive front in order to have any level of success. Look at the last three NFC champions, Robert. This past year, San Francisco. What's the biggest strength of the 49ers?
Probably their running attack.
Their running attack or the defensive line? Why aren't you appeasing me here?
Okay, their defensive line.
Thank you.
And also, Woodrow Hamilton was a president. He was president of his high school first class.
Thank you for that as well.
It's not true, but you're welcome.
Maybe I should have asked a different question. Who's the best 49er? Who's the most talented 49er?
I would probably say Jimmy. I'm just kidding. Probably Bosa.
It's Bosa. Thank you. You got to make things so damn difficult all the time. So San Francisco, it's their front. That was the difference. It was not just Bosa. It was Buckner in the middle of that defensive line who they then traded to the Indianapolis Colts. Great pick by San Francisco, taking Javon Kinlaw from South Carolina yesterday to fill that hole as well. I love what San Fran had. You have Armstead there as well. They really had success because of that front. The year before that, I'm scared to go to Robert here. I really am. Who's the most talented Los Angeles Ram?
Ooh, I think that's easy. That's Aaron Donald, right?
Right. Clogging up the defensive front. The year before that, it was the Philadelphia Eagles. Who's the best comp we've seen all over the place for Brown? Fletcher Cox. The middle of that defensive line for the Philadelphia Eagles. So, in today's league, you need to have a great front. Look at the Panthers Super Bowl teams. 2003, you had Peppers. You had Jenkins. You clog things up. Mike Rucker, 2015. KK Short, emerging Coney Ealy. He was having a lot of success. That was a really good defensive front for Carolina. But I just need to remind people, just because it was the pick Mel Kiper had mocked all along until, funny enough, the day of the draft, it was the most expected pick, doesn't mean it's not an exciting pick. It's the beginning of a rebuild. There's no magic player that can replace Kuechly, Bradberry, who gets over $16 million from the Giants, and the whole defensive line. However, that was the way Simmons was being sold. Ah, if we pick up Simmons, we're going to be good at linebacker. We're going to be good at safety. Oh, we're going to have an edge rusher. He's going to do everything. All our problems are going to be fixed. Super Bowl, book the tickets for next year, right? Now, getting a little ridiculous there. But I think this is a reminder. This is just the start of the rebuild. It's going to be a long road. But one of the big winners everybody agrees on last night was Miami. Look where they were at this time last year. Miami had a new head coach. They were seen to be downtrodden, trending downwards. You got Brian Flores just taking over there. And they picked up an unsexy pick. Christian Wilkins, defensive line. Around the same point Carolina was picking in this year's draft. And a year later, they positioned themselves with some optimism towards the end of the season with guys playing hard and a culture being established where they can get their quarterback. And now people are very excited about what the next decade of Miami Dolphins football might look like. So view this as the beginning. Not as something that's going to immediately produce results on the field for Carolina. Robert Walsh is the producer of this show. Aaron Gabriel's in the control room. Jordan Rodrigue, Panthers beat writer for The Athletic, going to join us in a little over 20 minutes. You can chime in at 336-777-1600. What did you think of the pick? Derrick Brown versus Isaiah Simmons. 777-1600 if you want in. On Twitter, at Sports Hub. Try it. If you missed how the Panthers announced the pick on social media last night, Panther social media across all sports, it's seen to be one of the best social media accounts out there. Their social, it's undefeated as far as I'm concerned. Never lost. And this is how they announced Derrick Brown as the newest Carolina Panther.
Derrick Brown is going to Carolina. Yes, he's going to be a Panther. We finally got our answer. Derrick Brown to Carolina. Here he comes.
That is James Taylor himself. I almost said James Brown because he's talking about Derrick Brown.
His would have sounded a lot better.
You think?
His would have been like, hey, Derrick Brown. Aaron could probably do it better than I can.
Why is that? Why are you assuming Aaron can do it better?
Because he's in a funk band. Don't make this racist.
And I love James Brown.
You want to give it a shot? What it might sound like if James Brown.
Here, let me keep doing what you're doing. I'll try to work on this on the side. We'll come back to it in 1 second. I got to get an instrumental for him.
I'm just fascinated to see some of the alternatives there. Because Bill Voth, he revealed on social media that there were some pronunciations he had to throw in for James Taylor. And I don't think he had difficulty with Derrick Brown. So I'm just interested what other alternatives there might have been, some of the inner workings here. But let's hear what it might have sounded like if James Brown was the choice instead for the Panthers picking Derrick Brown.
He's back! Yeah! Derrick Brown! Gonna be a Panther! Do Derrick Brown.
That's great. But what if it wasn't Derrick Brown? Like, what would have James Taylor's song sounded like if it was, let's say, Tua instead of Derrick Brown?
Tua Tagovailoa is going to Carolina. I bet you didn't think I'd pronounce that. But anyway, he's a P-cat. Tua Tagovailoa's in Carolina. Teddy, here he comes. Yeah, he's coming to Carolina to do stuff.
That's really good, Robert. Great pronunciation.
That was James
there.
Taylor. That
oh, yeah.
Not me.
My apologies. How about if it was Isaiah Simmons?
Isaiah Simmons is going to Carolina. One day you're a Tiger, the next day you're a Panther. Isaiah Simmons is in Carolina. Row, row, row!
That's fantastic. Man, that James Taylor is just such a talent.
Have you entered, just emptied out the reservoir completely, or is there anything else you have for us?
I got one more.
Let's hear it.
In my mind, Josh is going to get a mullet. They could have drafted Okuda. They could have even drafted Buddha. I wouldn't care as long as they didn't take one of those guys. But Josh is going to get a mullet in my mind.
I don't even know what that would look like, Robert. If I had a mullet.
It would look great.
Fantastic.
It would look like you had a mullet.
Women would just be
Party.
Falling all over.
Yeah. Yeah, Sarah would have to beat them off with a stick.
A big one.
It would be like... party in the front and also kind of a party in the back, but not really.
Josh Exotic isn't happening now because the Panthers took Derrick Brown.
Don't sound sad about it. We could still do it. You could still get a mullet.
Absolutely.
Coming up! Gosh. Why I actually love the Jordan Love pick by Green Bay. You see what I did there? Awesome. This is The Drive.
Come here to talk sports.
It is man at his most man.
And do it like you mean it.
What you got, biatch?
This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
We've got ratings in night one of the NFL draft. Looking at broadcast cable and digital viewing numbers. 15.6 million people watched round one of the draft, which is 37% more than watched round one of the draft last year. Not very surprising considering how little is going on, but there's a large appetite for the draft, regardless of what team you'll root for. But since we covered the Panthers very closely, I wanted to get more in-depth analysis on what just happened with Derrick Brown being the pick at number 7, and to do that, our good friend Jordan Rodrigue, now joining us from The Athletic Carolinas. But let's start on the television side of things, because we generally talk about food, and we talk about beer and culture and such. Which coach's home would Jordan Rodrigue most want to spend time in after seeing Arians on his patio, Belichick in his basement, Zimmer had all those Buffalo heads or whatever it was, and Cliff Kingsbury seemed to buy Scarface's house? Which one do you pick?
Well, you know, I grew up in Arizona, so I would probably say Kingsbury because I actually know exactly where that house is, and it's right by Camelback Mountain, and that's like one of the best hikes that I've ever done. So I would say if I could like get an Airbnb or something right there, or maybe like in the shed behind the house.
Yeah,
that's probably in my price range there. But that was a gorgeous house.
Yeah, I'm sure he probably has room to house you if necessary. The Carolina Panthers. See, when I'm looking at this pick with Brown, I think he might be, because of your certainty with his position, a little bit less of a risk than Isaiah Simmons. Slightly, I love Simmons a lot, but it seemed he's probably, Brown, a little bit less of a risk. And I think when you look at position value and you look at need at that spot on the defensive line, I think those things probably factored in to Carolina making this decision. What do you believe to be the primary differentiating factor between Brown and Simmons?
I think they really fell in love with Brown, his personality first and foremost. The dude, he was a little quieter yesterday. I mean, just the adrenaline coming down of everything, I can imagine. Just everything being so overwhelming. But this is a kid who knows something about everything, who's really, really humble and self-assured. And that's not to say that Simmons is not that. Simmons, by all accounts, is a great person as well. But the Panthers really just kind of fell in love with the personality of Derrick Brown. And also, you know, from a efficiency and logistics perspective, he was higher on their board because this is a guy who not only makes the guys alongside him on the line better, he also makes every single person behind him better. And so if you have a guy at a position who can occupy space, great. Stop the run, great. You probably don't want to draft just for those reasons in the first round. But if that guy can also have an X factor of being able to align in a variety of different places, even saw him at the five tech a couple times last year, and rush the passer and not only get the interior pressure and kind of ruin a guy's pocket, but also be able to come at you from the edge or pursue you in a very like ferocious way and fast way. There's a lot of things they can do with him. And so that combined with the fact that a defensive tackle like that with that kind of ability, that dual ability in that way, he makes the life of a linebacker easier. And the same cannot be said for the opposite at the position. So I think it was just a matter of efficiency and then the guy who they thought was the best player available.
Round two is going to begin later on tonight at 7 o'clock. Jordan Rodrigue, Panthers beat reporter with The Athletic, with us here. How surprised would you be if the Panthers don't go corner in round two?
I would be surprised. I would think that would be stupid. you can have the best pass rusher or the best interior lineman in the world, but if you don't have anyone on your roster who can fill a number one corner position, it's pretty much moot. Like, it doesn't matter how good your front is. If the quarterback can get the ball off and get it into the second or third tier, it doesn't matter how good your front is. It would just be stupid. I think I would be really surprised if they didn't target a corner. If they somehow added another pick, then maybe they could go receiver corner, but I'd be shocked if it weren't a corner.
What do you think separates Utah corner Jalen Johnson from maybe Christian Fulton from LSU, DBU in some people's minds, but then again, there seem to be like a half dozen of those now, and Stephon Diggs' brother, Trayvon Diggs, is available from Bama.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, our guy Dane Brugler is like totally better at this than I am, but from my sort of studying of these guys, because you know I've really been studying these corners, you know, I think that they each have their merits and the common denominator is they each could use some really good technical development. They could use a little bit of structure in terms of how they play. And that's something that obviously you receive at the NFL level. Now I think that there's a little bit of a difference in maybe a risk factor because, you know, Jalen does have that injury history. But at the same time, I think that all three of them, it really just depends on, I think, how they kind of quiz them and how they can see that they study. Because you don't just need a number one corner who can, you know, just get out there on the field and just maybe has like an okay core of receivers he has to go against every week. No, like this guy's going against the elite receivers in the National Football League six times a year and then maybe more depending on the schedule. And so this guy has to be able to really break down his opponent, really study and really play smart as well as very physically. And so I think that that's behind the scenes sort of in the film room and in these meetings is maybe where they're doing a little bit more due diligence on this player right now.
Ian Rappaport said earlier today that the Panthers are fielding a bunch of calls on Curtis Samuel, and you made it pretty clear on your Twitter page that they're not shopping him. However, they are getting a lot of calls, and it seems with how often Joe Brady likes to go empty like he did at LSU last year and did with the Saints before that, they really do have a strong value for Curtis. How much stock do you think Carolina has there in number 10?
Oh, I think they love him. I think that they would, it would be like if someone comes up to you and says, "Can I buy your house?" And then you say, "You can only buy my house if you exchange for me the country of Australia, the continent of Australia." Like,
or Cliff Kingsbury's house.
That's really what we're dealing with here. Like, it's not, there's a huge difference. The reason why I phrased it the way that I did is there's a massive difference in shopping a guy and simply understanding that your phone is going to be ringing a lot.
Yeah, the Bengals phone, I'm sure, rang quite a bit for Joe Burrow, but I doubt they were going to move off.
Right, exactly. So this is, I mean, they really, really love him. And so, and they also know that he's been put in kind of a crappy situation the last couple of years and then had the health stuff. So they want to see what he can do, and they think he can do some great things for him. Now, I still think they'll pick up a receiver later down the road, but I really think Curtis, they feel, many people in that building feel that he's going to be a big part of their offense.
Follower on Twitter, at Jordan Rodrigue, Reader Stuff in the Athletic Carolinas. We had Joe Person yesterday, you today. You guys are doing an excellent job of keeping us filled in. I've loved your stuff for a long time, and I'm sure we'll catch up somewhere down the line. Thanks for doing this, Jordan.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate you, man. Take care.
You got it. Yeah, that's Jordan Rodrigue. Robert, do you want to hear a fascinating stat that might back up how much the Panthers like Curtis Samuel?
Sure.
Josh Parcell, who does radio in Charlotte, just sent this out. Over the last two seasons, Tyreek Hill has scored a touchdown every 8.3 touches. Every 8.3 touches for Tyreek Hill, he scored a touchdown. Curtis Samuel has scored a touchdown every 8.6 touches.
How many total touches does he have?
Not quite as much, clearly.
Yeah, it's a lot lower sample size.
But the explosiveness is there. And if he's playing with somebody who's an upgrade from Kyle Allen, maybe you'll see a lot more of that explosiveness. And we also love the way Joe Brady, he was able to get the most out of everybody on that LSU offense. The way they moved around Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who's going to be great with Kansas City, that last pick they had. The way they used Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase. They just moved guys all over the place. Thaddeus Moss, that I think Samuel might be able to get lost along with DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson. I just think there are a lot of unique mismatches Carolina can find if all those wide receivers remain intact. Up next, hints at just how the Panthers, how much the Carolina Panthers trust what they have in Derrick Brown. There's some evidence of this here. And there's also some signs about who was aligned in this, just how aligned Carolina was. We'll get to all that next on a Friday Drive.
Here comes the life of the party.
The Drive.
Corrupting the minds and the hearts of our children.
With Josh Graham.
Program for low expectations.
On Sports Hub Triad.
Woo! Okay, full disclosure. I'm what you would describe to be a Tua guy. It doesn't mean I'm an anti-Burrow guy, but I'm very high on the Alabama quarterback, and I think he's the best prospect we've seen come out in the last few years. Miami, through all the smokescreen. They take them at number five. I think the Dolphins, they are becoming, slowly but surely, the New England Patriots. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to win six Super Bowls. Let me start there. But the way they're building things, it looks very similar to what a guy did around 2000 in Foxborough. First, there's the obvious. A lot of New England guys. A lot of New England defectors in Miami. The GM Greer. The coach Flores. Kyle Van Noy. He signed this offseason. There are plenty more that I'm forgetting to name. Those are just the big three at this moment. They took a chance on a quarterback. Now, I feel like I have to stop in chapters so people don't yell at me in their car and lose their voice. Aaron's kind of my barometer on this because his ears, they've perked, and he's saying that just through his expression that I need to be careful here. Tua is a risk. Not as big of a risk as maybe drafting Justin Herbert in my mind or, you know, starting a player who's drafted 199, but nonetheless, still a risk. Also, I think we all kind of knew in our hearts that the Dolphins found a way to check out Tua. If you're going to make this type of investment in Tua, then you will send a doctor one way or the other to check him out in Nashville. You will figure that out. You will get in your car. I think it's like an 8 or a 9 hour drive from Miami to get to Nashville. You will do whatever it takes to get somebody there. Even if it means the guy who goes there burns every single ounce of clothing he has after seeing Tua for protective purposes or wears a damn hazmat suit, you will send somebody there to check him out. And it seems Miami did get Tua checked out and got that hip cleared. They took a chance with the QB. Now they can build, understanding they have a guy they feel could be their franchise quarterback. So how are they building? They're stocking up in the secondary. This is such a New England staple. Usually, teams, they build through the front seven on defense. New England, they've had great guys in the front seven, but they're not players that they take in the first round generally. No, these are guys later rounds. Okay, we like this player's personality. We like this guy's style. He can fit into our system. It's a system defense. Belichick is a defensive maestro. He will work it out. When it comes to corner, they always have a ton of guys. Safety, too. Think about it. When's the last time you remember Bill Belichick and the Patriots without a stud corner and a legitimate safety to go along with it? Over the years, Ty Law, Lawyer Malloy, Rodney Harrison, Asante Samuel, the McCourties, Malcolm Butler, Stephon Gilmore now, Jonathan Jones. These are players that you could rely on in the secondary. Miami, they are following suit. Flores, they signed Eric Rowe in the offseason from New England. They signed Byron Jones. They're investing in the secondary. And while they already picked up those two cornerbacks and they have Xavier Howard on the roster, what do? They draft with their third number one pick, Noah Igbinogen. Got it. Robert, can we just edit that part out in post real quick? That'd be great.
Yeah, sure.
Noah Igbinogen. Nailed it. It's crazy that the Dolphins drafted somebody somehow whose name is more difficult than Tua Tagovailoa. I don't know how, but they figured that out.
Actually, Rick Ross had a little trouble pronouncing it too. Would you like to hear Rick Ross?
I would like to hear that. I would like to hear Rick Ross mispronouncing. Whose name is it? Tua, or are we talking about Noah Igbinogen? All right, just play the ball.
I love the coach. I love the team. I love the direction, but we got to take Tua. If you don't disagree, come on. Tua Tagovailoa.
Can you find Goodell announcing the pick? I want it side by side.
I told Aaron if I showed you this, you were going to make me do all kind of producing work. And I was like, don't tell Josh about this until later. I don't want to have to do all this stuff. And then you're like, hey, can you get everybody that ever pronounced the name?
I just want to know who did it worse last night. Is it Rick Ross or is it Roger Goodell? Because Goodell had to have known for years, plural, that he was going to say this quarterback's name. 3 years. He knew he had to say this QB's name. Gosh, Robert is so salty right now. I asked him to pull
I just
something.
Knew it was going to happen. Like, I hate, it's so hard to do this during the show where I can actually record something and produce it.
So sorry I'm making you produce.
Well, have fun going to break.
I'm so sorry. And I'm asking you to do production work as the producer of this show. It's an amazing thing that I ask you to do here.
I'm telling you, we will sit right here. If you keep it up, man, we will not go to break. That's cool.
I do like Brian Flores, though. The way that he has built this roster, I think I'm more optimistic about him considering how they finished last year. Just upending the playoff picture, beating New England at the end of the year with a stripped roster that was tanking. He seems to have instilled a culture there, and the team is having success. And now they actually have players, and they have cap space, and they have Tua. So I think it's something's being built there, and it's designed to look a lot like New England. Other coaches have tried to do that. McDaniels did so and failed. Matt Patricia, of course. Charlie Weiss, Romeo Crennel. But this is the one that feels the most legitimate. And I don't know if it's because the Patriots don't have Brady anymore, and they seem to be trending downward. But the Dolphins, I think they're doing it the right way. Okay, let's hear Roger Goodell announcing the Dolphins pick last night, and we'll put it side by side afterwards with Rick Ross's pronunciation of the Alabama quarterback.
With the fifth pick in the 2020 NFL Draft, the Miami Dolphins select Tua Tagovailoa.
Oh, so close. Definitely better than what the boss said.
Tua Tagovailoa, QB, Alabama.
I could hear that all day. Like, I'm going to put something else on your plate. I want every segment to close with just Rick Ross saying Tua, however he just pronounced this.
No.
Every segment can't end with this from Rick Ross.
Agree, come on. Tua Tagovailoa.
Oh, man. Has me really excited for ravioli for some reason. Give me some ravioli from the boss.
Oof. Oh.
Robert?
Ugh. I mean, what? Come on. I'd like to go to break so I can record this if that's what you want to do. I know we still got to keep going, but what?
You're so mad right now.
I just want to. I like to get things done. When I have things to do, I have anxiety. Uh-huh. You know about that? You know anything about anxiety?
I don't.
It's killing me over here. I want to get this done. So
it is funny. B Dot, he sent me a message yesterday where he was losing his mind because I've been selling him on CD Lamb all year long. And he never thought that the Cowboys would be able to pick him. They did. And Robert, he was with me watching the draft. I think you can probably describe it as relief when the Panthers took Derrick Brown. I just kind of collapsed on my couch with the Panthers drafting Brown, so I don't have to look like Josh Exotic. And Robert, he left before the Ravens picked. But before I could shoot him a text about the Patrick Queen pick for his Ravens, let me see exactly what Robert texted me.
Yeah, let's not play that. Oh, okay. You're talking about the text,
Snapchat video. He just texts me, "Let's go!"
Pretty accurate. My neighbors asked me what happened last night, if I got married or if I found out I was having a kid or something. I was like, no, we just drafted Patrick Queen.
You did?
I hate you so much. I'm glad it's Friday. I'm glad I get 2 days without having to see this again.
How much time are you going to devote to watching the draft tonight and Saturday?
The full extent. Saturday, I might just be on Twitter the entire time, but tonight, it's got my undivided attention. I also have to watch the new Dave, but I'll find time for that sometime in the later
hours. I'm going to wait till all the episodes are finished now with Dave before I start watching that.
Oh, my God. I'm going to spoil it for you just like Wolf was spoiling picks
for
you last
night.
Oh, my
gosh. I wanted to fight him.
Okay.
I wanted to get in a fist fight.
So we're in Josh's apartment, and he has a roommate named Wolf. He's a nice enough guy. I dig Wolf. And he is on a stream that is ahead of us. And he's sitting in the corner. He's talking with his friends, and he's like, "Ooh, I know who the Jets pick." And Josh is like, "Shut up. Shut up, Wolf. Don't be spoiling the picks." And I don't know if he was joking or not with this one, but it came to fruition. He was like, he would look at me every time because I was laughing every time he would tip a pick. And he was like, "The 49ers trade." And Josh is like, "Shut up, Wolf. I swear to God, if they trade, you're going to your room with no breakfast."
To his room.
You were like, you can't watch with us.
Well, no, I was just bothered. Like, if you're in a group of people, we're just hanging out watching the draft, maybe you shouldn't be on a video chat, like, with somebody else. Like, we're all just sitting here, and then we'll hear you say something, and we think that you're talking to us, but you're actually talking to somebody
else.
He's
on a whole nother video chat.
And you're tipping picks. Like, I mean, come on.
He's like, "Oh, I got the Jets pick right." And Josh is like, "You told me who you thought they were taking. I know what they're talking."
I just hate it. Like, it's a TV show. I hate when people tip the picks. Like, you can't wait. Like, what? How is your life going to be different because 2 minutes later you find out who they're drafting? Like, what are you doing in this pandemic?
Josh
while
was
in this
so
quarantine.
Mad.
I'm mad right now.
He went like
during this
was
during
a word.
This quarantine. Like, what are you doing?
Don't you spoil this for me.
Like, what are you doing? We haven't had sports in forever. Like, I get it if there's other things happening. Hey, I got to keep an eye on this, and, you know, I'm just following it on my phone. No, you've made a night out of it. We're paying attention. It's the draft, and, like, you're just going to ruin the TV show. Like, I felt the way somebody would if you, like, have DVR versus regular TV, like, just watching it on cable. Like, I felt like I was behind 2 minutes.
We were behind
terrible.
A lot.
Brutal.
Still a fun night. Great night.
Yeah. In honor of Derrick Brown, I'm listing off my top 10 Browns. Next.
Tua Tagovailoa.
We handle our microphones slightly better than the Patriots' Bill Belichick. Stupid thing. This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
I love this fact. Tristan Wirfs, the first round pick to Tampa Bay. He was born in January of 1999. That's the year before Tom Brady was drafted in the sixth round by the Patriots. Elsewhere in the NFC South, the Panthers selecting Derrick Brown out of Auburn, seventh overall. To talk about it with us is the voice of the Carolina Panthers. Our good friend Mick Mixon is back with us. In the last, 21 hours or so, Mick, what's your favorite thing that you've read about this kid?
I know what you think I'm going to say is what a great human being he is and how great he's going to be in the community and how he's came from a disciplined, structured home and all that. But I'm greedy, I'm grabby, I want the Panthers to be good. And so my favorite thing about him is that he can play. I love the pick. I know Isaiah Simmons is a fast, twitchy, mean, athletic athlete, can jump. And he'll play great against us probably. But I like this pick. We needed it, Josh. I mean, we needed some tractor trailer rig. We needed a big old skid steer, a track loader inside to help occupy blockers and help get to opposing quarterbacks.
I think the thing that stood out to me, just trying to get past all the stuff that we already knew in the draft process leading to last night, Joe Person wrote this for The Athletic. It was how Matt Rhule spent yesterday morning. He said that he kind of knew exactly what he wanted. The first time he chatted with Brown, it stood out when they spoke at the Senior Bowl and then again at the Combine. But yesterday morning, Coach Rhule said that he started watching the last game Brown played in an Auburn uniform, which was the Outback Bowl against the University of Minnesota. And what stood out to him was, this is a kid who could have been a top 10 pick last year, decided to go back to Auburn to get a degree, and also was going to be a top 10 pick this year, and unlike many, decides to play in his bowl game, and not one of the big ones, play in the Outback Bowl against Minnesota. And when he was asked why he decided to play in that game, he said, well, my teammates voted me a captain, so we felt it was the right thing to do. That's the kind of makeup that I think is important. Obviously, you need the football stuff to make it make sense in the long run. But at this stage, don't you think it's important, more important, the personality traits you're bringing in as Matt Rhule tries to build something?
Yeah, that's well said. I felt the same way. And he didn't just phone it in. He didn't just go out for the coin toss and work up a sweat and then tap out. I mean, he's playing hard right till the very end in that bowl game. I remember Dave Gettleman saying that one of his favorite bits of tape to watch, noted gym rat Dave Gettleman, former Panther GM, now with the Giants, he would find a tape where the team with the player he was interested in was way behind, out of it, no chance, and look at the last couple possessions, late fourth quarter, you're down 37-10, now what? Are you getting out of your stance like you mean something? Are you just catching blockers or just doing the minimum, or are you fighting? And so players that have the fight in them like that, when you combine that with their intelligence, with their athletic ability, strength, I think you can get behind it.
Did you enjoy watching the virtual draft last night?
I really did. I kind of got into it, and I was late to the dance because I really haven't been – well, for example, Josh, I tried to go in the office a couple times and got my knuckles wrapped, got an email from security, Mick, you can't come in. Matt Rhule has to work at home, so do you. You know, we love you, but just stay away. Oh, okay. So I had really no sourcing, and I didn't get as deep into Mel Kiper and remember the old Todd McShay, Mel Kiper days and all that. And
oh, yeah.
I looked at some of what was out there. I go to ProFootballTalk.com just about every day just to keep up like we all do. But I enjoyed the draft. I caught ABC's open, and I saw the Peyton Manning piece. Then I switched over to ESPN because I felt like maybe their analysis would be a little bit deeper, and I wasn't disappointed. Roger Goodell with the fans, that was a little fakey for my taste of, you know, come on, guys, here, boo me more. But you get it. You know, he's trying to be warm and glib in his basement.
I think I define it with three eyes. The three eyes of last night that I think made it an A-plus broadcast in my mind. It was intimate, it was illuminating, and it was overall interesting because it was just different than anything else we had. But the intimate front, I think, is what sets it apart. What home, either by a general manager, a coach, or a player, captivated you most? Which one sticks out?
Which one, being at home?
Yeah, which home that we got a chance to look into? Usually it's a war room. We get to see John Lynch and his kids running by, and on the window, some people were pointing out there's a reflection where you could kind of see his big board, and you see Zimmer in Minnesota. He has all these buffalo and deer heads on the wall. Cliff Kingsbury looked like he was in Scarface's compound. Like, you got a chance to really see where these coaches are. Usually it's just the prospects when they don't decide to go to the draft. Now, this time we get to see the coaches. We got to see the GMs. I thought that really added something.
I did, too. I'm going with Brian Flores with the Miami Dolphins. Miami thought they were going to go 2-14 or 1-15 and have the first overall pick. And they tried to climb up to number one. They tried to do a deal. The two-up thing you could kind of see coming, but they tried to do a deal to get Burrow, and Cincinnati would play ball. But Flores is a good coach, and I liked him. He looked like he was kind of not really very comfortable being there at home, but he kind of had to do it, and that'd be one I'd say.
Who looks more imposing to you right now in the NFC South, Tampa or New Orleans?
Well, you got to say New Orleans. I mean, Tampa Bay would be the easy. They've been a sexy pick for 10 years to flame on and take it deep, and now with Gronk and Brady. But I think until Breeze and the Saints are unseated. Until the Panthers in particular prove that that's not their kryptonite, then I have to say the Saints. How do you read it?
I'm right there with you. I think New Orleans, there was some fanfare this week when they announced to shut down all their offseason activity, not have an offseason program. And people said, oh, no, this might be the Saints. They might be set back here. And then I thought, well, they have their offensive and defensive coordinator back. They have their head coach back. They have Drew Brees. They have, I mean, most of the parts, they are known commodities. Tampa, we'll see what Gronk is after a year. We'll see what Tom Brady looks like outside of Foxborough. We don't quite know what all those parts are going to look like when they're together. And I also think when you're talking about a new scheme and you're talking about new players, I think OTAs matter. That's why you have them, especially if you're talking about new staffs and new teams trying to gel. So I think it's going to take some time for this Tampa thing to work out.
Yeah, I hope so. And I hate Sean Payton, but I love Sean Payton. I respect him. He's smart. And were it not for the missed call in the Rams game in the NFC Championship game 2 years ago, we might be talking about multiple rings for Sean Payton and Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. I think he gives that team a tactical, schematic advantage in every game, and he's very good at the end game of the chess game of coaching in the NFL. Use of timeouts, clock management, he's pretty good toward the end of the game. So I'll be so delighted and tickled and happy when Drew Brees finally retires.
It's the voice of the Carolina Panthers, Mick Mixon, with us here on Sports Hub Triad. Have you had a chance to watch the first two episodes of The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary series?
I was hoping you wouldn't ask me about that, because I really haven't. I've watched a little, and then I've read some about it. I want to just sit down with it when I have time, and I got no excuse, Josh. I should have racked it up and seen it. From what I've heard, people who know Michael Jordan's career well tell me that a lot of the first two episodes is stuff that's already you pretty much already know. If you followed his career, what do you think?
Yeah, that kind of is it. I think the more interesting stuff is the 97-98 footage, and we haven't gotten a lot of that yet because it's been setting up his North Carolina days and his Bulls stuff early on. But I only ask you if you've seen it because you're somebody who was just right in the middle of Tar Heel culture post-Michael for about 15 years or so. So I wonder, just being embedded in those circles with Woody Durham, who got to know him, and many others as well. Do you have a favorite Michael story that you've either been told or that you experienced firsthand?
Yes, I experienced firsthand going to a practice at the Smith Center to get some interviews after the game, or after the practice, rather, for the upcoming game. And Michael Jordan shows up at practice. He walks out onto the court right toward the end, takes his tennis shoes, starts lacing up a pair of tennis shoes, and looks at Jerry Stackhouse, Rasheed Wallace, Jeff McGinnis, that team, and said, all right, who wants some of this? And Jordan wanted Rasheed Wallace, but Rasheed was scared. But Jerry Stackhouse, who would be on anybody's all-dark alley team, you could send Jerry Stackhouse with a Bowie knife and a $100 bill and a map. You could send him to Afghanistan or wherever, and he could get terrorists. I mean, he could get the whole thing figured out. He's tough. And so Stackhouse says, I do. So Jordan and Stackhouse go one-on-one, and Rasheed Wallace the whole time is just like a little girl giggling, doing the play-by-play, doing the commentary. At one point, Stackhouse reaches in. Jordan hadn't started his dribble, top of the key. Stackhouse reaches in, and Jordan goes, uh-uh, if you reach, I teach, and then drives by him for a dunk. And then later, Stackhouse dunked on Jordan the place. I mean, there's only 20 people in there, but everybody went crazy. And then Jordan looked at Rasheed and said, you're next. And Rasheed says, no, man, and I already took my shoes off. And he shied away.
That's tremendous. When you do get time to watch it, you're going to love it. Mick Mixon, it's just good to hear your voice, man. I hope sometime this can clear up. I can go up to Charlotte, pay you a visit, and hopefully we'll have football stadiums with fans in it and whatever. But obviously we're not in that time right now, and there's a lot of uncertainty around us. But sports is a place you go to kind of escape from that at times, and I appreciate the conversation.
My pleasure. You're sounding good. I catch your show a lot when I'm up and down the road, and keep up the good work, young man.
Thanks so much, Mick. That is the voice of the Carolina Panthers, Mick Mixon, here with us. What are you guys jabbing on about in there? I'm looking over the control room. You guys, you're laughing it up. It's funny. It's a show within a show. I think what we're doing on the air is pretty interesting, and ratings suggest that as well. But during the show, I'm just looking at you guys, and you clearly aren't paying attention to what's being said at all.
I'm paying attention. I just heard Mick compliment you on a job well done.
At the very end of that, tell me about his North Carolina story. What was the story he said with Michael Jordan?
Play against me. And he was like, oh, my shoes are off.
Rasheed Wallace.
This is like when the teacher is like, excuse me.
What did Michael Jordan? What did Michael Jordan?
You're next.
Do
I teach?
What did Michael Jordan do? Who did he teach?
He taught
Stackhouse.
He taught them.
Don't try me, Josh Graham.
We're listening back
here. I'm a multitasker.
Wait, hey, can you pick up reading where we're at? Yeah, right here, where it says next is taken to the house.
Try to call us out. What's wrong with you, man?
Got I want to try something. If you want to sing Rhinestone Cowboy with us. In 10 minutes, it's a ride to a Cowboy Friday.
Please
336-777-1600. It'll probably make your day, and it'll certainly make Robert's.
It will definitely make my day, because I am tired of just me and Aaron singing it.
777-1600. Be in the phone number. We could put somebody on hold. I can say this pretty flatly and confidently, and I'll add it as a disclaimer. I hate it when people compare their ordinary lives to professional sports. I hate it when they say, oh man, if it was me, I would have taken less money to go there. Really? You would have taken $40 million less to go play for your hometown team versus the Yankees? I don't think you would. Also, they're like, man, if somebody... I remember it was the Tennessee coach. He used to be at Alabama, Jeremy Pruitt. He grabbed someone by the face mask on the sideline, and people said, man, in my office, if my boss put their hands on me like that, I would revolt. Oh, yeah? I would say that your situation in accounting is a lot different than playing bleeping football, I would say.
Also,
it's just different.
The fact that you said that you would revolt makes me feel like you would just go and talk to HR.
Probably.
I think it's an interesting
premise. That's a disclaimer on the front end. But there are situations where I do think it applies. And Aaron Rodgers, what he's going through right now, I think it is fair to compare that to ordinary life. If you're working somewhere and you've done a lot for wherever you're at, and you figure out that they just hired your replacement and they want you to prepare him to take your job, how do you think you would take that? I know we all say, oh, the right thing to do is to be a good teammate. Oh, don't. It was bad for Brett Favre to treat Aaron Rodgers the way that he did. And Rodgers, man, you gotta bring this kid in. You need to groom him. It's what good teammates do. Would you be, if you were in those shoes, whatever that equivalent is in your job, would you be as giving, as willing? Because I think, just like Rodgers would brute, and likely is still upset about this, you probably would be too. You probably would be complaining in your office. I think everybody complains about their office setting. We do here at Sports Hub Triad. There's things that we complain about.
Not me, Jenny.
Everybody complains about things except Aaron.
No, it's just Josh. Jenny, none of us complain. We love it here.
Having a grand
right.
time.
People complain at their jobs. You always looking sideways to see if someone has a better deal than you have it, or if somebody's coming for your job, or how things are going to affect you. So I think in Rodgers' case, it might be fair in a rare instance to look at that through a very human prism. One that you could simply put yourself into a similar spot and see how you would act. And however that is, maybe that's the fair perspective to have, the fair opinion to have on how Rodgers should be conducting himself. Robert, what do you got in Ticket to the House?
While one zoo is letting the monkeys run the asylum, another zoo is throwing animals in jail.
Captivating. That's next on The Drive.
Tua Tagovailoa, QB, Alabama.
Josh Graham loves to talk sports. He also loves writing sports poetry, but he can't think of a rhyme for puck.
Oh, I get it.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
I've been walking these. We've been doing study groups for this show, or test groups. And one thing we kept getting back, Robert, is not enough singing.
Well, you got it today.
Yeah. If you missed Robert, or I mean James Taylor's auditions or outtakes for Panther draft picks not named Derek Brown, you can find that on the Best of Podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. Jordan Rodrigue, Mick Mixon were with us as well. We expect to be joined by the head coach of the Panthers, Matt Rhule, early next week. But it's Friday, so let's just throw things out and get a little tune in there on a Rhinestone Cowboy Friday.
Like a rhinestone cowboy, riding out on a horse in a star-spangled rodeo.
I still have to look up the lyrics to this song.
Like a rhinestone cowboy.
Getting cards and letters from people I don't even know. Robert, go.
And voices coming over the phone.
Nailed it.
It's offers coming over the phone. We take it to the house next. We take it to the house right now.
Past the 15, past the 10, past the 5 for the drive. We'll take it to the house.
1, 2, 3.
What's so funny, Aaron?
That was rough.
That Robert didn't know the lyrics or that I did a tease.
Okay, it doesn't matter that I don't know the lyrics. I've never looked these things up. They're literally, even if it's offers, voices coming over the phone, I'm
and
having fun.
Offers coming over the phone.
I'm having a fun time over here, and Josh is just a cloudy cloud.
Don't you hate it? You hate it when people mess up the lyrics to songs?
You didn't even know the lyrics. You had to look them up.
I admitted that, though.
I know, but you don't get to tell somebody, hey, that's not the right lyric. I looked that
you
up.
You made a segment, Rhinestone Cowboy Friday.
I didn't make this segment. I did it one time, and then we ended up singing it every Friday. I'm not complaining. I love Rhinestone Cowboy. Also, I wish you would get thrown in this polar bear jail that is specifically for polar bears.
Okay.
There is a former aircraft unit in Canada that serves as a polar bear detention center for polar bears that cause a nuisance in Canada. I'm not even talking about zoos. I'm just talking about something got in your trash. Oh, it was a polar bear? Damn. We're going to have to call into polar bear jail.
Naughty bear.
It says they have up to 400 polar bears at one time. That is the biggest hell no I've ever heard in my life.
13th Amendment not working for these bears.
They've got 4 bear arms, and I still wouldn't be able to contain them. I would not mess with them if they paid me in free health care. I couldn't do it. I shan't do it. Free the polar bears.
You've said shan't a couple of times today.
Have I?
You have.
Well, I shan't do it again. Also, another zoo is sending around a specialty team to cleanse the entire park. By specialty team, I mean a monkey in a mask with a gas tank on his back. His name is actually Bingo, which is surprising enough. And his job is to spray the park down. Well, he has been asked to stop spraying the park as it's not doing anything at all. It started as an engagement stunt to get people to look into the zoo more, and now people are just really worried about this monkey's safety. And I didn't know if you guys had ever done something in public that would risk your safety.
Oh. I mean...
Show's almost over.
Nah, come on, man.
I got the kind of
time. Give me a quick one.
We talked about standing on bars earlier in the week. That would qualify as jeopardizing your safety.
I would agree with that.
I'd say.
I rode through Stokes County once at night.
What?
I rode through Stokes County once at night. That was dangerous.
There you go.
I actually drove down the road I grew up on, no lights, in the dark once. It was a dare, super scary.
Panthers, please take a corner tonight. Please, I'm begging you. Preferably in the second round. We'll talk to you Monday for another edition of The Drive.
Tua Tagovailoa, QB, Alabama.